Susan Sinclair, Reel 3. Yes, you were saying about the market garden work that you did in Yorkshire. This, of course, would have been the time of Dig for Victory, wouldn't it?
Yes, very much so. I'd gone through college and my parents had moved up to Yorkshire because they'd been bombed out, both at home and in the business. My father's business was burnt down in a big city fire. And their best friends, who were the people that I had gone to stay with when I arrived in England, they were up in Yorkshire in Otley, in Ilkley, and we moved to Otley, where my father started up again. And they stayed there for quite a long time, although they came back to London for the next lot of bombing. And I was up there, and I worked in the market garden, which gave me quite good experience. And at a later stage, I started a market garden myself for a colonel who was going to stay in the army until this became a paying proposition. And planted a plantation and market garden with German prisoners of war, 20 of them, and quite a lot of amusing stories about that, because I pretended to speak just schoolgirl German so as to be able to help the young interpreter along who had schoolboy English. And in order to work things out, I said I knew a bit of German. And they started this thing up. It was just fields, and they brought equipment from the War Agricultural Executive Committee, and they dug the place up, and then we planted trees, and then we had a little market garden as well. And I did, in fact, eventually have to tell that one German prisoner of war, because he'd said something to me that if you spoke only a little bit of German, you wouldn't know, and I had translated it too quickly. And he said, "Hey, wait a minute, you speak much more German than you admit." And so I told him a little bit of my history, and he said that his parents had made him read Heine, and when he had wanted to join the Hitler Youth boys to burn the books, his father said, "Yes, you can, but only after you've read them." And so his background was interesting, because he came round to understanding his parents' attitude, whereas the Hitler Youth was a very strong influence. They did fun things, and people wanted to belong, and they wanted to fit in, and that's what he wanted to do. But his father obviously had greater influence. And so he was quite interesting, and I daren't admit to my parents that I actually liked him, because all the stories were coming out. It was just the end of the war, and all the stories were coming out of what had happened to people in concentration camps. I didn't tell anybody about the fact that I'd really made good friends with all of them.
Going back earlier in the war, you know, when at the time of Dunkirk, when it seemed that England might be invaded, was that a very anxious time for you and your parents?
I think more for my parents. I think I was just a thoughtless youngster. I don't think, of course one was afraid, and of course the bombing was awful, and a lot of our friends were in the forces, and I don't think that I ever really believed that anything simply terrible would happen to me. I always thought there'd be a way out somewhere. And my father had an English friend. I said to him one day, "You know, God always treats his people as they treat their Jews." And my father believed that. And he kept telling us that. And he said, "You know, here we are. We have found a home here. And it's going to be all right." So there was sort of optimism, but of course one was very anxious, one followed the news. And
How about the policy of being an enemy alien? Well, did that affect your family?
Yes. Well, it affected me. Well, it affected all of us. The way it affected me was that I couldn't stay at college because the Horticultural College was in Kent, and that was a bit too near to the coast, and I had to leave. And I had only just sort of got my bearings because my fellow students had all been brought up differently. And it was quite difficult to get the feel of the place and to get my bearings, and also to really cope with my fairly insufficient English on things like artificial fertilizer, if you don't know what artificial is or what fertilizer is, and all those sort of things. And the other thing was at the college was that most of the girls who were there, it's a women's college, were there because they'd been very keen on horticulture, and it seemed to me that it was part of general knowledge here. And to me, I hardly knew what a cabbage looked like when it grew. So I was in difficulties anyway, and having sort of just found my feet, I had to leave. But the college got bombed and evacuated to the Midlands, and then I was able to rejoin. And, sorry, what was the question you asked me?
Yes, I was wondering, you know, how this affected your family.
Yes, well,
you know, and were you called an enemy alien? Was this your status?
Yes, everyone went before a tribunal, and you were graded, and I got, I think, Category C was the grade that was just sort of, they realised you were a refugee, a genuine refugee, and my father, the whole family were graded C, but there was a lot of panic at the time, because nobody quite knew where these the German spies were hiding in among the German refugees, and there was an attitude of, you know, lock them all up. And my father went on every day with a little suitcase with his overnight stuff, and but the policy was changed, and just about the time when it was time for him to be interned, so he wasn't interned, which was great. And my sister joined the ATS, where she became an officer. And
your sister's names, what were they called?
Eva and Lisa, my older sister Eva.
In the ATS?
Yes. And she wasn't actually there too long because she met her husband where she was stationed in the office. And she was married and had a baby. And my younger sister was still at school. She went to Henrietta Barnett School in North London, not far from where we live. And she was then supposed to go to college, and she knew that for my parents it was quite a sacrifice. And so she decided she'd rather have a job. And she was very, very musical. She had my elder sister and I had learned to play the piano when we were girls in Germany, and she was found in the music room one day playing a piece that we were playing beforehand, and having found the tune and the accompaniment. And the teacher, whose husband was a concert pianist, said he doesn't believe in teaching very young children, but I would like him to hear her. And he then took her on. And she learned until she went to Switzerland. And unfortunately, the piano didn't make it among their parents' furniture. Well, I think it had been smashed up. So there wasn't a piano, and anyhow, they had a very small semi-detached house in London. There wouldn't have been room for one, and this all got lost, except she spent her life going to concerts. my elder sister was married. Over 55 years ago, something like that. My younger sister was married and divorced, and she's on her own. And she became a travel agent. And she still travels a lot. In fact, she's on her way back from Egypt at this moment.
The hard time your parents had, obviously, when they came to this country, were there, and you mentioned your sister's job at Bloomsbury House, were there any organisations or people to help your parents?
My sister had done a secretarial and translating, interpreting course in Germany, in Hamburg. That's where she was during Kristallnacht. She got a permit to work with my father as his secretary, but she couldn't take on any other paint work, which is why she worked at Bloomsbury House until he arrived. She then became the secretary in that little outfit, she stayed there till she joined the ADS. My mother had quite a hard time because her English was doubtful and her housekeeping abilities nil. And so everything took her so long. It took her all day long to clean that little house and make a meal. And the shopping was difficult, pronounce things. And anyhow, what were half these things? And then she had a very tight budget. So everything was new and everything was difficult. But they managed, they're positive people. We were very strong marriage and very good friends. What was very amusing was my mother and her girlfriend from Germany discussing, what do you do with carrots or whatever? And how would you cook such and such? And I know that when those pheasants came, they all studied the books. But they all managed. The hard times were the war, the financial situation. My father was very highly strung after his experience. He was very highly strung as we all were, very young age, very bad nerves. That was bad, probably his early death was due to that, these experiences.
Did he ever go back to his old character, after the camp?
Yes, some of it was still there, but there was this other thing, all the worries and all the horrible experience. He had a great sense of humour, which carried him through a lot of difficulties. He was a very cultured man and a very well-read man, and both my parents were very keen to give us whatever they could of that, I think it was hard times for them. It was so much easier for us to settle in.
Earlier, Sue, that you began to hear about the full extent of the Holocaust, or the beginnings, of the news coming out towards the end of the war.
Yes.
Can you remember, when you started hearing and what you heard?
Yes, there was a time when the House of Commons stood in a minute's silence to mourning for the people that were being killed, that had been killed. And stories gradually came out, but it really was after the war, and many friends of my generation heard that their parents had died. It was a very, very sad time. Some of them just could not get over it, and some of them still don't know what happened to their parents. We were very fortunate. The whole family was here. They brought my young sister over a week before the war from Switzerland, and that was all five of us together again. It was just after the war that one really got to know what really happened, and it really got worse and worse, and it seemed unbelievable. It's only when you meet people. I met one woman, she came to stay with us, and I chatted to her while she was having a bath, and I suddenly saw the number of her arm. It is such a shock that people have gone through that. Equally, when we went to Holland and went to the Anne Frank house, I did not, had not expected for that to hit me so hard, because it really felt here but for the grace of God. That's all right. And it was, if that was not long after the war, when they built that museum in the house, I guess it was a few years after the war. And yes, well, we learned of various school friends and relatives who had perished. One very good friend of mine at school, I had always noticed what a lovely family they were together. They were terribly nice to each other. Anyhow, the whole family of father, mother, two brothers, and the sister who was at school with me, they were all killed. And cousins and an old aunt who had lived with my grandfather, and various people. But I mean, we were really fortunate that our very closest family all got away. So,
but obviously, members of your extended family.
Yes.
Were lost, were they?
Yes, they were. The one I suppose that I was closest to, apart from my school friend, was my grandfather's sister. She had been widowed and had lost her only child and had moved to be with my grandfather. And they were always together as if they were a couple, because he was widowed and she was looking after him. And she was sort of like an extra grandmother. And she died in Theresienstadt. And yes, it was a lot of my parents' friends, the couple I mentioned earlier on where I went on Friday evening, they were a childless couple who made a big fuss of their friends' children, and they were killed at the Battle Village concentration camps. And well, lots and lots of people one kept hearing. A young rabbi who had joined our community shortly before we left. He and his family were killed. It was a killing of people having lost their lives in this brutal way. And we read a lot, still read a lot about it. And it seems incredible to me that people are denying it. Because one knew so many that did die.
Did you see any of the films, you know, when... Did you see any of the films
yes.
when Belson, you know, the details
were... Absolutely dreadful. And you can't help feeling this could have been me. I'm just so lucky to have got away. You know, I never really felt I wanted to go back to Germany, and I was very surprised when my father went back, because his business was in
When did he go back? Would that have been long after the war?
No, not so very long after the war. As the toy industry, which was his field, built up, Nuremberg was really the town for toy making. He went back because he said, if I don't, my competitors all will. But he came back as fast as he could every time. But he still went back. He had a family to support and business to run. So he did go.
Was he compensated
yes.
for what he had lost?
I'm not totally sure exactly how he was compensated. He got something back for the business, something for the house, but the people who had taken these things on, they didn't really want to be paid. So it was a long battle, and he had lawyers, and they were all inundated with this stuff, so I don't think it was handled terribly well. And yes, he had some compensation, certainly. And but I think he felt very strongly that, you know, the best thing he had was his life and his family. And he had made a life for himself again, in a different style, in a much reduced style, but the family were happy, and that was the main thing.
How about British nationality? When did you get that?
Very soon after the war. And I had two very nice references. One was from the man I spoke about, who was my father's representative here in England, and who was a wonderful reference, that he had known me since I was a baby. And he didn't tell all the other things I did, which he kept telling me about. And the other one was from Hubert Beaumont, who was Deputy Speaker of the House. I think he was the Deputy Speaker. He was of Chairman Ways and Means, and who had got us into the House of Commons quite often, and who's a good friend of my father's, and he wrote a very nice reference. And so I didn't really have a problem. I mean, I was young, I had been educated here in part, and in fact, my names were sort of semi-officially changed in my naturalization certificate, because Susan was spelled in the German way S-U-S-E, which here I discovered was pronounced Suze, which I couldn't bear, so I changed it as soon as I learned to speak English. And Emily had been spelled with an I-E in the German way. And he said to me, "Are you known under any other names?" And I said, "Yes, and normally I make it Susan Emily." And he said, "Right, we'll make that your official name." And he wrote that into my naturalization certificate, which I was very pleased about, because then I got it officially.
Was it important to have British nationality, do you think, for all of you?
Terribly important, yes. Terribly important. A friend of my father's, to whom I had gone, the family I lived with when I first came to England, he said he had a wonderful dream that he had invented something that would make England win the war. And the king had asked him, "What would you like?" And he said, "Make me British born." And you always joked about that history. But it was very important, because you need roots somewhere. And well, I spent the first 15 years of my life in Germany, and an awful lot of years here since. And you need to have roots, I think. And when I go to Germany now, it's really like a tourist who knows the country and the language. But I keep a sort of distance from people that are older than me, there are not so many now, until I know where they've been and what they did. But the sort of things they say, they didn't really want any of that. They just played along with it. You know, you can't believe it, really. But I must say, in fairness, that a lot of people really didn't know what was going on. When we had our house smashed up, the caretaker came up, and he looked around and he said, "If only our Führer knew about this." He doesn't know. People believed it. I think, you know, the simpler they were, the more they believed it. And so I think that quite a lot of people really didn't know until after the war went on. Now, the younger people do, because we had a German au pair there, and they were taken to see these films. They were taken to the camps, even, and shown things, and they were ashamed of their parents' generation. And a lot of them still feel quite guilty about it.
Do you remember the day war ended and the celebrations, if any?
Yes, I was in Suffolk. I was in Bear St. Edmunds, and I just ran around the streets with everybody else and danced. great celebrations, yes. Yes, it was really a very exciting time, but there were a lot of Americans down there, and they said the war isn't over yet because they were still fighting in Japan. Don't celebrate this hard. You know, let's just get the whole thing over. And nevertheless, we did celebrate.
Well, when did you meet your husband? And your husband would be Peter, wouldn't he?
Yes.
Peter.
Well, we met in 1947. I had come back to London. I had finally decided that horticulture really wasn't for me. And I went to the London College of Secretaries, and there I did all kinds of language and secretarial things, and it was really a nice, easy life. And I joined the Leaders Club, and I thought this would sort of go hand in hand with what I was doing. And I did German play reading and advanced French and beginners, Spanish, which is what I was doing at college. And Peter had also joined, but he had joined to meet girls, so he told me. And so we met, and it was very comfortable to have somebody of your own background. And within about 3 months we were engaged, unofficially, because Peter was in his first job, and neither of us were earning very much, and we, in those days, of course, we had to speak to the father, and he didn't feel that he could do it just yet, and before he could, he had polio, and he had been, you know, so energetic and good skier, good all-round sportsman, and he was ill for a long time. And he came out with 2 calipers and 2 sticks, and got rid of his 2 calipers before we actually got married, because he really didn't want to look up the aisles, sticks or calipers. And that was a tough time, because we had so many wonderful ideas, none of which, of course, seemed possible. And when he got a little bit better, I took him out in a wheelchair. And he was at University College Hospital, and we went window shopping at Heels, thinking we'd never, never do this. And in fact, I could see myself being the breadwinner, because it didn't quite look like Peter was going to be able to do anything, but you can't keep a good man down. And he did very well. He probably told you all this. He, from the junior executive, became chairman and managing director of his company. And, the window shopping at Heels wasn't so out of reality. At that time, I think simply because I was young and optimistic and that, didn't accept that he wasn't going to be well. I didn't feel so badly about it. I went to see him every day, and he told me one day that he would have to break off our engagement because one of the doctors had told him he would never be able to stand again or even sit up without having his back fused, so he could either lie or sit, and he didn't think there was any sort of life ahead of him. And I told him I didn't believe him, and I wasn't going to break off our engagement anyway. So he said, okay, I will show you some improvement every day, as he did. And for my birthday, he sat in a chair. On the first attempt, he had fainted. I didn't know that. But he did. He made tremendous progress. And, when I took him out in the wheelchair, there was a little cafe around the corner with the most terrible multicolored neon lights. But at least we were alone there. We were really sorry when they took that away from Road Wiley. So very sentimental about that little cafe. And he gradually got better. And I think he told me he went to Churchill Court, which had been given to Churchill by an American, and Churchill had given it to the British Legion. And there he spent a month or two recuperating. And then he went back into part-time work.
You were saying how you appreciated the fact that you had a background in common. Of course, your sort of Holocaust experience was very an important part of that, wasn't
it? Yes, all we just told each other all that happened to each other. It wasn't so dissimilar.
Do you think it is important, you know?
It's important to me. It's important to me that we were both bilingual and... that we can joke in German and even in Bavaria.
Because you went to Munich, didn't you, at one time?
Yeah, but Munich was also Bavaria, you see.
Yes.
I spent quite a lot of time in Munich in my childhood because I had something wrong with my eyes, and There was a woman who did some sort of treatment, and I spent a lot of time there during the holidays.